People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. Very often we talk to musicians, conductors, and so on, but today we're going to be talking about the art of teaching to a violinist. And I'm talking about Jan Repko, who was born in South Africa, started studying the violin with Jack de Wet, and continued his studies with Davina van Vele at the Sweerling Conservatoire in Amsterdam. He's also worked with people like Nathan Milstein, Dorothy DeLay, Victor Liebermann, and Beryl Sinofsky, and has regularly performed as a soloist and in chamber ensembles. And after 5 years as concertmaster of the Northern Philharmonic Orchestra in the Netherlands, he decided to concentrate on teaching and was appointed at the Conservatoire in Amsterdam. And during this period, he was very active in teaching talented young violinists and is a co-founder of the Netherlands Youth String Orchestra. So Jan, it's very good to welcome you to South Africa.
Thank you
and
very
to Cape
much.
Town. And I gather you've been brought out by the Cape Town Philharmonic to give master classes and to present a workshop to violin teachers in June.
Yeah, that's right. I floated this idea with Louis Heinemann a while ago that I would like to come and do some work here. I sort of see my work in South Africa as a sort of kind of payback to the wonderful years I had as a student here. And I was so very privileged then. When I was a young child in the arm.
As you say, working with people like Jack de Wet, who was famous for producing so many fine violinists.
Yes, I mean, I started with him. He was the only teacher I had in South Africa. I started with him when I was 5 years old and stayed with him until I was 19, 20.
Oh, fine. Yeah.
And he then suggested that I go to study in the Netherlands. But anyhow, my period in South Africa as a privileged child then, I mean, it is so different to today.
Yes,
I mean,
indeed.
I had all the chances possible. It was just, and nowadays it's so difficult for so many people here in South Africa to get good education. I mean, from the whole society.
What I found interesting when you spoke about being persuaded by Jack de Wet to go to Amsterdam, you said somewhere that you preferred the idea of going to Europe than going to America, where a lot of people go to study.
Yeah,
is there a reason for that?
It was instinctive.
It was really instinctive.
Okay. My father was born Dutch, although I wasn't brought up with a Dutch identity, really. But I sort of instinctively always knew I would like to go to Europe. And most of my peers went to New York or went to the States and studied there. For some reason, I just didn't want to go.
Oh, so it didn't have anything to do with style or anything
no,
like that?
No, it was pure instinct.
Pure instinct.
I mean, I set foot in Europe and I felt comfortable. I feel very comfortable in Europe.
But now, you're living in Manchester, you say to me, and you work quite a lot in the Netherlands and Amsterdam, so you obviously travel quite a lot.
I don't do that much work in the Netherlands anymore. It's about 20 years ago, I used to teach in Amsterdam. We can get to that later. But I used to teach there, and then they invited me to go and teach in the UK. It was time for a change then.
Oh, okay.
And so I've been teaching, well, it's 20 years now, I've been teaching in the UK.
I think the question that most intrigues me is, why did you decide to go on the teaching route rather than a performer? Because you were clearly a very accomplished performer and soloist.
Yeah, teaching, I remember my first student when I was a first-year student in Port Elizabeth University, the conservatoire there. And I just, from the first lesson, I just loved doing it. It was just absolute joy. And the first student's name was Neil Hamilton. I can remember this little boy of 5, 6 years old, whoever I taught. It took me 3 months to teach him to play Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And I was so proud. I was just so incredibly proud that I could teach a child to do that.
Gosh, that's now, very interesting.
Now, of course, only 3 months is a long time to do that.
Yes, of course.
And I was very influenced by Jack DeWitt, by his enthusiasm for teaching. I mean, he had a great, great enthusiasm for teaching, and that rubbed off.
One assumes that teaching is such a different discipline to playing, and not everyone can be a teacher. I mean, I know some musicians hate the idea of teaching. They don't have the patience, or they don't have the sort of the willpower to teach people. So this discipline of teaching is something that's a gift that you either have or don't have. Is that right, would you say?
It's a gift, I don't know. It's just... It is something you feel comfortable doing and something you want to share your knowledge, and you want to help students, you want to help somebody create something. I mean, what more beautiful is there to learn to somebody to play the violin?
Yes, and to hear them, and that you did that.
Yes, it gives tremendous, tremendous satisfaction.
Are you patient?
Sometimes. I'm patient if a student practices and does his best. Mm-hmm. I'm not very patient with lazy, sloppy students, I'm afraid.
No, well, then it wastes both people's time, doesn't it?
Yes.
And theirs.
No, if you want to achieve something, even as an amateur, if you want to get better, you have to sweat a little bit.
Of course. Yeah. Now, I'm intrigued at what sort of music you've chosen, Jan, and your first piece is an excerpt from the Goldberg Variations by Bach. And, I mean, apart from the fact that it's a magnificent work, why have you chosen this?
Well, we can only play an excerpt.
We'll play the aria.
But yeah. The piece in its whole is, of course, an incredibly complex piece and a long, long piece. This is one of my absolute favorite pieces of music, because, for me, you can find all human emotions known to us, you'll find it somewhere in this piece. I mean, there's joy, there's sadness, there's grief, there is jubilance.
Yes, I mean, it's a form of ecstasy, sometimes happiness.
You can find all these emotions in this piece.
Now, you've chosen one of the two recordings that Glenn Gould did, his 1981 recording. Yeah. Is there a reason for choosing this one?
Well, I like the clarity in it, and I like the wisdom in it. And he sings along with it.
he
just gets lost in the piece. Absolutely. You can hear the man is just totally transcended. It becomes part of the piece. Oh.
aria. That's the movement that opens the Goldberg Variations by Bach. That's from the 1981 recording with Glenn Gould and the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Jan Repko, who's in South Africa as part of the Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra to give masterclasses and to present a workshop to violin teachers during this month of June. So, Jan, coming to work here back in South Africa, do you get a chance to come back from time to time? How often? I mean, you still have family here.
My sister still lives in Durban. And I used to, pre-COVID, I came every year for a number of years to work in Soweto with the Arco project there, set up by Louise Lansdowne. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very fulfilling to do that. Now with COVID, we had to resort back to online teaching with the students. Mm-hmm. But the Arco project has brought out some fantastic results, and there's some students already from that project who got places in Europe to study further their studies there.
Oh, gosh, that's very good.
It's very, very, very nice. I mean, it's very difficult, and financially it's always difficult to arrange these things.
Yeah, of course.
But ideologically, it's really wonderful. It really picked up some students right from the street.
Yeah, they
and
have. Yes.
Give them chances on the international studies and so on.
Yeah, where you are overseas. How have you found working online? Has that been difficult because of that, not having that instant contact? Or do you get used to it, or what's the story?
Well, online hit us really hard. I mean, first of all, COVID hit everybody hard in Europe,
course,
like everywhere
course.
In the world. And I've so many of my colleagues, performing artists, lost so much. You know, they lost their income. The people had to sell instruments to keep alive. I know of musicians who suddenly became drivers for supermarket deliveries.
Yeah.
And people, it was just really terrible.
Mm-hmm.
As a teacher, we were very fortunate. We could continue with our work. So within 2 weeks before COVID, I really didn't like online teaching. I really hated it. But we were forced to do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And within a week or two, we set up things. I bought some proper boxes, speaker boxes to get sound. We found the best sort of platforms to work with. And we just got on with it. It was just in the beginning extremely, extremely tiring.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, I'm used to working 8 hours a day, no problem. I could teach, no problem. And suddenly I hit online teaching, and after 4 hours, I was just dead. I was just so tired. Imagine teaching 8 hours online.
Yes. I mean, what made you tired about teaching?
Well, this
online?
is we all me and my colleagues, we all found this.
Oh,
we all had the same. And I remember after the first week, now I've never in my life had this, thank God it's Friday feeling.
Yes.
It's the only time in my life that I really came Friday. I sort of sat down and poured myself a stiff whiskey, and thank God it's Friday. Anyhow, this for the first month, it was really, really tiring. And you just got a little bit better. And then I spoke to a neuroscientist about this, a friend of mine. And they explained to me that when you work online, you cannot read body language. So you cannot read facial expressions. And we are so tuned in normal life to do these things. So your brain apparently just goes over time and keeps on finding, trying to interpret things that are not there. And apparently this is one of the main reasons why one gets so tired.
Gosh. And do you have students from all over the world? Or
yeah, most of my students are international.
Do you have students in South Africa at the moment?
I mean
that you teach online from London.
Well, I do some of the work with Arco, yes. So the Soweto kids. There's one girl that I did. She's hopefully going to be able to go to Manchester now I did some work with her, preparing her for her auditions in Manchester. Okay. I don't do that much teaching here online.
Okay.
Actually, I'm glad that the online teaching is sort of waning down, because
I'm sure you
we could do a lot of work, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could do a lot of technical work you could really, really get stuck into. I also had to learn not to talk so much when I teach, because you cannot talk while the other person is playing. It just doesn't work.
Right.
So you had to analyze, and you had to pick, give direct instructions to the student before they start playing again. And I also started getting my students to send in tapes of their playing, which we would then, during the lesson, discuss. And this had a tremendous effect on the students, that a serious student won't send a bad tape in. They will record
and re-record
until they think, well, this is the really absolute best I can give.
Yes,
and by doing
that,
they are learning.
Oh, yes, true. That's a positive way.
There were many positive things to take away
from us. Yeah. Jan, your next piece is the famous Schubert song, Shepherd on the Rock, which is a very long song, so we're going to take an excerpt. And why have you chosen this, apart from the fact that it is an extraordinary piece of music?
It's just so beautiful.
And you've chosen Ellie Ammerling.
Well, Ellie Ammerling, she sings Schubert she's an absolute one-off on singing Schubert. And so often I get my students to listen specifically to her. When we play violin, we really have to try and imitate the voice. And her voice is so pure, it's so, if I may say, kind of innocent. It is so uncomplicated. It is simple. Simplicity.
Open.
It is open.
And free.
The simplicity in her artistry is just unbelievable. I've got a great, great admiration for her.
Well, let's listen now to part of Shepherd on the Rock by Schubert, sung by Ellie Ammerling. Thank you. that's part of one of Schubert's, for me, certainly really great pieces, Shepherd on the Rock. And we heard there Ellie Ameling, the soprano. And it was the choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note, Jan Repko, who's in South Africa, courtesy of the Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra, to give masterclasses and to present a workshop to violin teachers in June. Interesting, Jan, that you are giving a workshop to teachers. Do you have lots of experience teaching teachers, or not that much?
Well, I have a lot of experience in teaching my own students how to teach. That's how I learned.
Oh, okay.
We have to pass on knowledge to each other. I mean, I think every musician should at some stage in his life teach the next generation. Otherwise, we have to pass it on. You have to pass on the flip. And South African teachers, they are so dedicated and so, but they are isolated. I mean, it is not so easy to travel anymore. It is not so, it's becoming very, very expensive for them to attend international festivals and classes and seminars and so.
Right.
And my stage in my career now, I'm starting to learn how to do it. I'm starting to cut the nonsense out. I nearly used the wrong word, but I can analyze very quickly now what needs to be done. I can bring it down to the bare essentials. And I would like to share this with the teachers. I mean, I can teach the students things here, and I've got an hour to work with them. How much change I can bring to them, I don't know. But if we can get all the teachers together and we can discuss the problems of violin playing and violin teaching and have an open discussion, I want to learn from them. The last thing I want to go and do there is come here and as a sort of kind of guru and sort of spew my knowledge there.
Yeah.
Every teacher, every class has its own specific problems, and if we can get some discussion going on how to solve these problems, and an ongoing discussion, hopefully, the students will benefit.
Of course. Jan, what made you take up the violin? I see you started very young, and you...
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
I just wanted to play the violin.
Do you come from a musical family?
No, my mother was very musical, my father too. They loved music. My mother played records all day, noon and night. She listened to music. And apparently I just nagged to no end that I wanted to play the violin. And living in Bloemfontein, Jack DeWitt was there, so I was just very fortunate.
And that's why you started with him so young?
Yeah, that's why. He was the teacher there.
Wow.
So it was just pure coincidence.
Yes.
And when he left for Port Elizabeth later to teach, he took up a professorship there. I moved with him. We were a bunch of 7-8 students from Bloemfontein area who wanted to keep on studying with him. And they arranged for us to go to Port Elizabeth and continue then.
Right. And then did you become part of an orchestra, or how did your career develop?
Well, I studied in Port Elizabeth University for a year and a half, but then it was really time for me to move on. So then I went to Amsterdam, where I studied with Davina van Wely for 6 years. I did my solo diploma under her. During this period, I already told her that I was really interested in teaching. And she would help me, and she sent students to me already. And I sort of, while I was a student, already became a kind of assistant to her. Then straight from conservatoire, I went into, became concertmaster in Northern Philharmonic in the Netherlands, which was very fortunate because those were the bad old days of apartheid. And if I did not get a job then as a concertmaster, I would have had to leave the Netherlands and come back to South Africa, which at that stage I wasn't prepared to do.
Right.
And anyhow, I just had to get this position.
Mm-hmm. But presumably you enjoy playing, even though you decided to become a teacher. Being a concertmaster has its own challenges, as we know. but also just the joy of playing.
Yes, I really loved playing it. I did a lot of it. And it was
chamber music, orchestral music?
Chamber music, orchestral music, recitals, solo work. But there came a point where I had to decide what I really want to do.
Yeah.
And I also believe if you want to be happy in life, do what you do best, and you've got a good chance of becoming happy at the end of the day.
That is true.
And I just felt that this is really what I can do really up to at a very high level.
Yeah.
Combining the two, I tried it for a while, but I was getting to a point where I was teaching a lot and not having enough time to practice to play at the high level that I expected of myself.
Right.
So it was a choice. It was an obvious choice for me in the end.
And I must ask you this question. Being in Amsterdam, did you have anything to do with the famous Concertgebouw Orchestra, the Royal Concertgebouw?
Not directly. But, I mean, I knew a lot of the people, players there. I knew Herman Krebers. I knew him.
He was their concertmaster, wasn't he?
He was concertmaster. Just before I went to Holland, he had an accident and he had to resign from the post. But, I mean, he was one of the big, big figures in the history of the Concertgebouw. Bernard Haitink, they worked very well. Herman Krebers was there for 25 years, I think, concertmaster.
Have you been to many of the concerts of the Concertgebouw?
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward. If we move back to Amsterdam, I'm looking forward to going again. Oh, it's fantastic.
Orchestra. It's one of the concert halls that I've never been to that I really, really want to go
to. It's a shoebox and
it's
it works.
It's a shoebox, yes.
And it works.
Like the Musikverein in Vienna.
And it works. It's fantastic acoustic.
Now we're going to have another piece of music, and Mozart, a piano concert, number 18, the second movement, with Murray Pariah. Apart from the fact that it's such beautiful music, why have you chosen it?
This piece is so, so sad, and it's in G minor, I think, it's in minor key, and it reminds me, I remember a very, very dear friend of mine, Arnold Bosman. He's a Cape Townian, became a really, really good accomplished pianist and a conductor. And we met in Amsterdam in the Netherlands when I went there to study. And we stayed very close friends. And he died far too young. And I remember, somehow I connect this music to him. And this morning when I woke up, I mean, I had to choose four pieces. I didn't know yesterday what I was going to choose. I thought, this piece is very appropriate. Reminds me of Arnold. It is full of drama. It's full of pathos. It's got this incredible sort of symphonic feel to it. It's a great piece of music. I don't think it's that well known. There are some other second movements of Mozart piano concertos that are more famous, and this one is very special to me.
Thank you. That was the Piano Concerto No. 18 by Mozart. We heard the second movement there, Murray Pariah with the English Chamber Orchestra. My guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week is Jan Repko, a teacher who's out here to teach and give master classes, courtesy of the Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra. And Jan, we were talking about your playing just now. Tell me about the violin or violins that you have. What make have you got?
Let's start from the beginning. When I finished studying, I needed a good instrument to play in the orchestra. When I was at the conservatoire lent me a very nice old Italian violin, but I had to give it back. So I started, before buying a house or a car or anything, I bought a fiddle. And it was a Landolfi then. And I had the violin that my father bought me, I could trade that in. And anyhow, I went to a bank, and the bank was, a violin, you know. A house, yes, but a violin.
A car, yes.
Anyhow, I somehow persuaded them to lend me the money, and I paid off all my salary for the violin. Anyhow, I sort of sold the Landolfi then, and I sort of moved on and resold and got a little bit of money here and took a loan. In the end, I have a Balestrieri from 1795, which is a very, very good instrument.
How did you come to get it? Did you just notice it on sale, or did you?
Word was out that I was looking for.
Okay.
I was looking for. Somebody contacted me, and we made a deal, and I could buy it.
But now you also apparently have a Stefan Peter Greiner.
Yeah, Stefan Peter Greiner is a modern German maker, relatively young. He must be in his 40s now, maybe going 50 now. A top modern instrument, absolute top maker. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's very sought after. If you want one of his violins, that he must make one for you, then you have to write him a letter, and he will vet you, yes or no. And then there's usually about an eight-year waiting list for that.
8 years?
8 years.
How do you decide which one to play on what occasion?
The Greiner, I usually, when students have important concerts or exams or auditions or so, I lend them. They may use the Greiner. I think Jordan is playing on it on the moment, Jordan Brooks.
Now, he's from Cape Town, isn't
he? He's from Cape Town.
And he's won awards, and he's been on our radio station, and he's one of your pupils, isn't
he? He's one of my students, yeah.
Right, okay.
I was 2 years ago, about 2 years ago now. I was teaching online, and Suzanne Martens phoned me and said, my mom's got this student, would like you to listen to him. I said, well, busy now, but call me at 6 o'clock when I'm finished teaching. So there was her mom called me, and yes, he's very talented and gay, you know. Has he got some recordings that I can listen to? So within 5 minutes there were some recordings, and I remember sitting downstairs sort of relaxing after the day's work, listening on my phone to the recording that they sent.
Yeah.
And my wife was, she's a musician, she's a pianist, she was in the kitchen. And she heard this, and she said, who's that?
Oh, really?
I listened to about 3 bars, and I thought it was
he's got something.
Clear this boy has got something to say.
There must be times where you have to say no to people, where after 3 bars you can say, this person is not going to make it.
Yes, it's hard. It's sometimes hard, but, I mean, we have to qualify what does it mean to make it.
Well, true.
What does it mean, making it in music?
Absolutely. You can make it in all sorts of different ways.
Exactly. So,
and you could start off badly and then improve.
Yes. I mean, everybody's got his own baggage and his own talents and his own what he wants to do with it, and one must respect that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very, very wary to say, well, he's going to make it or he's not going to make it. If he makes it as a professional violinist, I'm happy.
Yes, of course you'd be. And we were talking about violins just now, and when students come to you, are you quite insistent that they have a decent violin? And I don't know what a decent violin is, but to have a decent violin is surely quite important.
Yes, because, I mean, you need to be able to produce a good sound quality on the violin must be good. A violin must also challenge the student to find... Every violin has secrets.
Mm.
And finding these secrets is part of the development. Students also, they can't continue playing with the violin because the violin's got nothing new to offer to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really time to move on. It's just the problem now. I mean, old Italian violins are...
They cost a fortune.
They cost a fortune.
Forget about cars and houses.
Yes, no, you can buy a big house for the price
yes,
of a violin.
Exactly.
And my violin, I was able to do it when I was a 25-year-old starting to work. It's very, very, it's virtually impossible for young musicians to do. But, on the other hand, there are very, very good modern makers nowadays,
mm-hmm.
which for a decent price you can buy really, really good ones.
Okay, and I see another thing you've said, there's a musician, a violinist, I think a musician across the board, has to have a good memory. Is that absolutely essential?
Depends on what you mean by memory. I mean, I memorize music, but I know so much music is in my head.
Yeah.
But did I actually sit down memorizing it? No, you practice. Memory in music as such is a combination of many things. There's a musical memory, you remember the harmonies. There is what people wrongly call a muscle memory. It's reflexes. I've found, and I've still, when I was a student, if I practice properly, systematically, you just remember things.
Hmm.
And my students also, if they follow the very systematically build up things over a longer period, then memory comes by itself. I never expect my students to go and sit down and memorize. It's all tied in with a muscle, with muscle memory, musical memory, visual. I can actually visualize pieces that I studied as a child. I know exactly where I can see the pages. And a lot of people can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't got a visual memory,
photographic
memory, but yeah. Because you study it, you can recall it.
Yes. It's a difficult thing as well to study the violin. We're all told if you want to study the violin, and if there's anyone listening who wants to take up the violin, you must start young. You can't start in your teens, you could, but I think you're at a disadvantage.
If you want to become a professional violinist, I mean, I can compare it to tennis, to gymnastics, to any top sport in that, where coordination is incredibly difficult at a later stage.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about little fine movements that the older you get, the more difficult it becomes. And it's the same as in tennis. It's all golfers also. I mean, top golfers start playing before they're 8 years old. Tennis is the same. You can start at 12, and there are the exception then that super talented, natural talented people can then still do it, but it's really the exception.
So 8 years?
Five.
As you did, five.
5 to 7 to 8 years, getting a little old already.
Right.
But 5 to 7 is ideal. I mean, you get them in the Far East, they start them at 3.
Oh, they work.
They just put them a violin in. They start
yes.
playing. It becomes natural. It comes natural to them. And then, most important is to have really, really good structured lessons.
Aha, from the teacher himself.
There we go back full circle. Those formative years are so important that there's good structure, so that you cut out all tension in the body when playing, and that you have to learn as a young child.
I can see by your expression that you love your job teaching young people to play the violin so young. We're going to have to end now, and you've chosen Abdullah Ibrahim as your last piece. Is there a special reason for this?
Yes. I think he's one of the greatest South African musicians. I mean, he is really incredible. And this piece, specific piece that I chose, is a protest song that he, well, it was a hymn written by Nzikana in the late 18th century already, and he put it, there was some song to it, and they are songs, church, they use it as a hymn, I found out. Mm-hmm. And he used, Ibrahim used this during the 70s as protest music. And it's incredibly, incredibly powerful piece of music. It's a passacaglia, the bass continues, it just sort of repeats. And it builds up to this incredible, incredible climax. And wonderful piece of music, absolutely fantastic.
Well, we'll listen to that now, Nzikana's Bell. And my guest on People of Note this week has been Jan Repko in Cape Town to give masterclasses, presenting workshops to violin teachers. And I hope you get a chance to relax as well, Jan, and enjoy some of Cape Town while you're here. Well, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.